Nicholas Brandt, and we're talking this week about healthy relationships, staying healthy ourselves, and relating in healthy ways with others. What we're going to be talking about today, I've entitled, Please Others, Don't Cry, and Other Messages. Before we get into that, I'd like to do a little bit of an introduction for the people who were here last Monday and for people who weren't here, and it's the same introduction. I'd like to repeat what my thoughts are about why it's important for us to take care of ourselves, to nourish our inner lives, to look at who we are as people and our uniqueness. The reason I'd like to do that is because I still feel that some of us think this is a narcissistic or self-centered or maybe makes us yuppies to be self-involved. And I would like to contrast why I don't think that's true. What I'm talking about is not to be totally absorbed in yourself and to make your own person the total focus of your life. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that by working on who you are, on nourishing your inner self, you then can contribute to others and you can give and you can be involved with others along the journey that's your life. Let's think about a car. How many of you have a car or own a car with a spouse? Okay. Lots of cars. Now tell me, why do you have a car?
Transportation.
Transportation, to get around.
To work.
To go to work. Now some people probably choose cars based on status. The fact that the kind of car that you have is often a message about how you view life in some ways, what's important to you. The choice of kind of car might be a status thing, but for the most part, the reason you have a car is because you want to get places. It helps you get to your work, which is your chosen contribution to the world. It might help you to get to your volunteer kind of position, which I know some of you have. It helps you to take care of other people, take care of your family. It provides you a service. So you have a car because it helps you on your journey to move out. It helps you to see things, to go places, to refresh yourself. Now, what would happen if you paid absolutely no attention to the gas gauge, the oil gauge, your tires, and the condition of your engine?
Break down. You would die.
Yep, break down, die. Some morning you're just all revved to go out there and do things for the world, and your car won't get you there. Well, I'd like you to think about working and nourishing and understanding yourself in that same way. It's not the focus. The focus of my life is not to take care of my car, and my car will tell you that, my old Honda. But the focus of your life is to get someplace else. In the same way, though, if you don't fill yourself up, just like a car, it's going to run out of gas, and you're going to find yourself unable to give as freely and generously and creatively as you can to the world when you take care of yourself. Is that making some sense? Think of yourself as a car. You've got to fill up at the gas station every once in a while. Another point I'd like to make about why it's important for us to know and accept and nourish ourselves. And that is that we often trip over ourselves. By tripping over ourselves, or parts of us, or unfinished business that we still have, it gets in the way of the journey of our life. Lots of people lose their jobs not because they can't do the job. They lose their jobs because they can't get along with people. It's more of a relationship problem than a work competence problem. That's an example of tripping over yourself. Something's in the way. You're on a hike up to Holden Lake and you can't get there because there's a boulder. You can't get off to the vistas, to the higher levels, because there's something that you have in the way to work on. So that's my little pitch on not feeling selfish about taking care of yourself, not feeling self-centered about focusing on who you are and the kind of unique person that you are. So it's possible to go through life with never taking a thought for yourself. But I think you miss a lot of the beauty and a lot of the richness along your journey if you choose not to look inside also. We're going to be talking today about messages. We're going to be talking about our stories. Our stories are the individual experiences that each of us had growing up. And I like this quote really well from Maslow, so I'll read it in case you can't see it. As we come to understand ourselves and our story better, we increase love, courage, creativity, and curiosity while reducing fear and hostility. I like to think about that as your guarantee. I like to think about that you are guaranteed these benefits, love, courage, creativity, and curiosity, which you can then enrich other people's lives with if you take the time to enrich your own inner life. And we're going to also be looking about the fact that some of our stories, yours as well as mine, have included times of pain, possibly despair, crisis, uncertainty, doubt, other fun things, other things that are not all the Pollyanna, that all of our life has been this wonderful story of sunshine and mountain meadows. But the past is the servant, not the master. So everything that we have had in our past enriches us, if we choose to look at it that way, enriches and deepens the people that we are today. And the past is not the master. We don't have to stay in the past. We don't have to stay in the messages that may have limited our experience in life. They are a servant to help us, but they don't master us. And that quote is by a person who writes a therapy, group therapy book. He's really respected as a therapist. Okay, so we're talking about each of our stories today. And our stories are different, as well as being similar. There will be a lot of cultural and generational similarities as we talk about our stories, but there are also differences because of each of our individual perspective. Those of you that heard Walt talk last night about one 12-hour period in his life on December 24th as a 10-year-old, heard an incredibly detailed as well as aware kind of experience that he had, one story in his life. Well, each of you are you're a walking storybook. Each of you have stories that you've experienced that have been a part of who you are. And if you take the time to dig back into your past, you could probably do the same thing that Walt did. Maybe not quite as skillfully, because he's certainly an incredible writer, but you could take moments of your life, times in your life, and you could create a story because you have experienced those stories. We're going to look at those today, and each of those messages that we received helped to form the fingerprint that we now touch the world with. Each of the stories, the messages, the growing up experiences that we had helped to weave part of a tapestry that you are continuing to weave. And you know, when you weave, you can sometimes drop things. Or when you knit, you can change colors. In the same way, the tapestry of your life can continue, and you can continue to add in an artistic and creative way what you want to put into your tapestry, even if there's some threads back in the tapestry you'd like to drop. Okay, so let's talk about that. That's what we're going to do. What I'm going to invite you to do is to in an imaginary way, put on an archaeologist's hat. So we're going to go digging. We're going to go digging back into your particular past, your own kind of personal culture that was formed by the people you grew up with, the parents you had, the other significant adults in your life, the geographical location that you grew up in, the cultural values and the cultural feel of the place that you grew up. Now, as a child, the messages you received, some of them were stated, like, clean up your room first and then you can play. The message being, work comes first and then we can play. A lot of the messages we received, we saw rather than heard. We saw them acted out. We saw how our father related to our mother. We saw what kind of characteristics women had in our family. We saw the way men handled their emotions. We pick them up because as little kids we have this incredible antenna, and we're just like little sponges looking around the world without the kind of verbal and intellectual skills that we now have as adults, without the kind of perspective that we now have. We picked up all kinds of messages because that's what we were, little sponges going around picking up information as we looked at our world. So the messages were heard, they were seen, and they were felt. They were just picked up in the air, so to speak. And we walked away with those. We walked out of our homes with those. They were integrated into who we were and what kind of people we were. And unless we look at those messages, they're still there. They're still there. And at this point in our lives, as adults, we can decide, do we want to keep those messages? Maybe those messages worked for our parents in the Depression or the World Wars or the world circumstances that they were in. And maybe those messages work for us, maybe they don't. But now as an adult, you're not a little child without verbal skills, without intellectual understanding, and you can now make your own decisions about that. But those messages were real powerful. They're very powerful. Remember how little you were. Look at some of the little kids around the village and then imagine looking up an adult and seeing how powerful that person was in your life and what an incredible influence that adult or those adults were. And what they said was it. That was how life was. Do you remember when you were a kid and you went over to somebody else's house and they did dinner a different way or they ate at a different time? Or they had different kind of bedtime routines when you're having a sleepover with somebody. And you kind of got this feeling, oh, there must be more than one way to do things. There's lots of different ways to have family life. But as a child growing up, what you saw was normal. That was it. That was how life was. Because that's what you saw. And that's what was your familiarity. I keep using this word messages, and I'd like to give you some instances or some examples of that so that you understand. Some of you holding little bits of paper already have a clue about that. But Russell Baker is a journalist, and he's written a Pulitzer Prize-winning book, an autobiography called Growing Up. And he recently wrote another one. I think it's called The Good Times. And in this book, The Good Times, he talks about the message that his mother gave him. The message was, amount to something. What he said was the result of that message was a lot of anxiety. And the anxiety was, how do I know if I've made it? How do I know when I have amounted to something? Have I really made it in her eyes? Have I amounted to something? So the messages that we get in some ways can be helpful and positive and helpful for us in relating and understanding life. In other ways, they can be a little bit, the flip side can be negative, or the other side, the unspoken part, can be a detriment for us. I heard a message yesterday. I was sitting on the porch of Chalet 10 thinking about today, and next door in Chalet 9, a woman was telling somebody named John, who I don't know, she was giving him compliments about how well he had cleaned up the chalet and how good it looked. And this was his comment. My mom always used to say, if you're going to do a job, do it right the first time. Have you ever heard that one? So as I was sitting there, I thought, isn't this amazing? This message just came floating right up to my porch just at the time I was thinking about these messages. So I thought that was fun. Another message. Last week, received a letter from my father. And my sisters and I have done a lot of kind of this kind of archaeological digging into our past, and we like to spend time kind of talking about that when we're together. And we really did figure out what our family messages were, but I don't ever remember seeing it on paper. And last week I got this letter from my father, and there it was, black on white, right before my very eyes, my father's philosophy of life, which became the message that he passed on to his three daughters. Well, it's in response to some real pain in our family. My youngest sister's husband has decided to leave the marriage. And it's a real painful time for her emotionally. She's in Southern California and didn't really want to move there from Oregon, but went because of her husband's career. Now he's moved off to Dallas and left her with this house that they're remodeling and redecorating, which they both are very artistic and do a good job. And they turn these houses into these wonderful treasures, and they sell them, and they go on and do another one. It's kind of a creative thing that they do aside from their jobs. But he left her in the middle of this mess. And if you ever remodeled a kitchen, she said she learned how to cook meatloaf and pizza on the barbecue. So she's having to deal with a lot of questions about what am I going to do with my life. Well, she came up to visit my youngest sister, or my other sister in Eugene, my father in Portland, and myself in Gig Harbor. And after this trip, visiting us and getting help and support from us, this is what my father was writing about. Life goes on, and you have to pick up the pieces and with chin up, take off. I'll say it again. Life goes on, and you have to pick up the pieces and with chin up, take off. You know what bird I thought of? For the first image that came to my mind was a roadrunner. Just going. Like, just keep going. Well, let's think about that message for a minute, because that was how I grew up. That was a real strong message for me. And I know where it comes from my father's, his parents losing their farm during the Depression, having a $75 scholarship to go to college, which we'd have loved to have done, but couldn't because of not affording it, getting $17 from his mother and heading out to Portland to make a life for himself. And I think it kept him going. And I can see the value of a message like that. But what's the other side? What's in the implication of this? What's missing?
Don't deal with the pieces before you pick them up.
Absolutely. Just get in there and start picking them up. Don't give yourself time to sort, to grieve, to assess where you are, that inner time of healing. Anything else that you didn't hear in that message that could have been helpful?
Don't depend on others.
Absolutely. Don't let anybody else help you. Don't seek out help from other people. Don't say, boy, I'm in a really tough time right now, and I'm going to get all the help I can get. I'm going to let other people do for me. And my father, who's losing his eyesight, will not let my stepmother help him. And he should be off the road pretty soon. But he won't admit it. He is going to do it on his own. Well, that comes from his message, and that's his belief system. And that's the message that he passed on.
Seems like there's a lot of fear in that, in the message that he's giving, because if he commiserates with her, he'll be saying, it really is that bad, and I don't want to admit that it's that bad for her.
Mm-hmm. And that would be hard because he wouldn't know what to do when he hurts. It would be hard for him, because if you can't let people in when you hurt, it's going to be real hard to admit that you hurt. So you don't admit that you hurt, and you just keep on going. Keep those feet moving right on ahead. Yeah, that's right. So in a message...
It's a denial of feelings you have. Mm-hmm. And denying others the right to their feelings.
Mm-hmm. And so what the feeling from my father always was is that it wasn't okay to have all these feelings because it would bother him. And so to take care of him emotionally, we didn't let him know we had those feelings.
But wasn't that typical of the culture they came from?
Absolutely.
Aren't you reading a lot into that? When you say your father had no feelings and et cetera, you're reading an awful lot into the statement.
I don't think I said he didn't have any feelings.
No, but...
But he was afraid of expressing those feelings or letting himself have those feelings to the extent where he would know what to
how
do.
How do you read that into that statement? I mean,
yeah,
that statement
true.
Didn't say that. You read that into that right. statement because personal, but you can't read that. You can't come out of that with that statement.
But isn't that what's important to her?
It's yeah, but she was asking. She was asking us.
What did we hear from that statement?
And you asked us what we heard from that statement.
Yeah, that's and true. Because I'm taking my own personal experience and hearing that statement in my own psychological perspective.
Mm-hmm. So, what your father, you know, someone else might read it, and I assume your sister reads it like you did, and yet she may not be like you because she had
a different
life than you did.
Right.
And so it certainly can mean to me that, you know, I've got a problem, but I can't let it dwell. I must move forward, but it doesn't any place in there say that I can't deal with other people emotionally. Those other people can come and help me move forward. In fact, I might bring a lot of people into my movement forward.
If you let them come to you.
Yeah, I can do that with that statement. It doesn't say that I can't. In fact, it says I should, maybe, if my father was that kind of a person.
The statement clearly says don't feel. It says pick up the pieces and put your chin up. What if, you know,
what do you mean it says it doesn't feel?
Chin up.
It doesn't say that.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Well, she knows it says that because that's her father.
Yeah, but that's not what she's trying to teach us.
I think we have to be careful not to read criticism of a loved father in this. I think that's really important, and I don't sense that you're criticizing your own father. This is exactly something my father would say, and I would shake my head and I would say, that's my dad.
And I love him for how he is.
Yes. Right. And then I have to go fix things on my own. But this doesn't mean boo-hoo, I can't count on him. But that's the way he is.
And I would guess that same kind of many, many fathers and mothers and others would have wept and cried and mourned getting the news like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, in their effort to help you along, they're going to make this kind of statement. It's natural.
Well, maybe what you're reacting, thinking is just taking one statement and trying to analyze it that way. If we're to look at our parents or ourselves, we've got to look at a lot of statements and a lot of things we've done. I'm sure that's what she's done, and she says, well, yeah, this pulls it all together because I've got these other 100 pieces of evidence that makes it. So
I think I really, maybe I made this too simple and too stark. What I wanted to emphasize was that sometimes when you hear a message, you need to listen for what you didn't hear. Is that, can we agree with that? Okay. And I was using it as an illustration, and maybe, and you know, the thing that you pointed out to me was that I heard this with all my ears of a small child growing up in the Brand house. And it never occurred to me that you wouldn't have heard that the same way. That's a good lesson. Because we hear things out of our perspective, out of our experience.
And your sister didn't hear it the same way.
Yeah, she did.
It strikes me as the comment about you don't want to wallow in the feelings. There's a lot of range of motion between feeling the feelings and dealing with them and wallowing in them and not and ignoring them completely and moving on.
You know, I think I've acted on this advice of picking myself up and going on. Well, I don't know if my chin was up all the time, but anyway, going on. You know, that's a helpful message. It's not a pity yourself and stay stuck message. So there is a lot of value to this. And I love my father, and he's lived this life with this message, and I can accept that. I think there's times when it doesn't work for him, though.
I can tell you about going forward. My father came from Germany in 15, and he went right forward because he owned a farm later on. They worked, he just went forward.
And that's the immigrant story. I think that's a very common story, probably in many, many of our backgrounds. My father, too, from immigrant Germans. You know, you get in there and do it. And there's a lot of America's built on that in a lot of ways. And I don't want to put that down. I just want to say that there's a side to life that sometimes the messages negates or doesn't talk about. And that's the part that we, in looking at these messages, can add back into our lives. We can maybe use the positive of the message, but also add the other part to balance it out. What I have... Oh, another question.
Yeah, I'd just like to also deal with it. We can also, within reading messages that we don't, you know, that are not spoken or written, we can misinterpret, and we really become very screwed up sometimes because of misinterpretation of what the sign language is in relationship to parents or to brothers and sisters and so forth. We don't always read those signs correctly.
That's right. That's why I'm saying we're putting on our hats. We're archaeologists, and we're digging around for what's the truth here. The truth the way we were told it and the truth the way we see it now and sorting all that out. I'd like to invite you to put on your hat, imaginarily, and I'm going to ask people who have been kind enough to agree to read a series of life messages, family of origin messages, that are just a collection. And there's no right, wrong, good, bad about these at all. It's just a bunch I've collected in working with people. What I'd like to have each person do, I'll read a number so that you know where you are in the sequence, and just read it as if it is the truth, with conviction. Read it as if this is absolutely what you believe in your heart of hearts, even if you don't. But I'd like you to read it that way. Now, I'd like to invite all of you, before we do this, to, if you want to close your eyes or just in gazing out into space, go back to a childhood home sometime maybe before about fourth grade and wander through your past and look around that home see the people in that home? Remember your room in your home? And just in your mind, put yourself back, and as you're listening to these messages, come at it from a child's viewpoint, a child's feeling point. Okay, message number one.
Life is exciting. It is a real adventure.
Number two.
A scene.
Pardon?
Could you say it again a little louder?
Yes. Oh, the first one you want?
The second one, please.
Okay. Be seen and not heard.
Just a moment of interruption. What I'd like you to feel for anything that feels right for you. As these messages come along, there will be some that go, nope, that wasn't us at our house at all. But there may be some that go, Okay, back to your childhood. Let's go on with number three.
Always look good.
Always look good.
Number
four.
Life isn't easy. It's everyone for himself.
Number five.
Life is about having things. Your own home, money for an emergency, security for old age.
Six.
Always be in control.
Seven.
Success in life is judged by how popular you are, by how many people love you.
Eight.
Success in life is spelled M-O-N-E-Y.
Nine.
You only go around once, so grab all you can while you can.
Ten.
Hey, life is about having good times.
11.
It isn't whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game.
12.
If you've got your health, you'll be all right.
13.
Education is what's important. They can take everything else away except your mom.
14.
Get your own plot of land and build high fences around it.
15.
There is only one way to do things.
16.
The older child must set a good example for the younger children.
Was that 16? Was that number 16?
Yes.
Okay, 17.
Your family is your source of love.
18.
Women should be organized and responsible.
19.
You'll spoil kids if you tell them good things about themselves.
20.
Women should always be doing some kind of work.
21.
Be strong and don't show your vulnerability.
22.
When you love, you get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
23. Be cheerful. Don't be angry or sad.
24.
Life is a tough proposition, and you have to look out for yourself, or you might be taken in.
25.
Don't feel sorry for yourself. Just keep working.
And 26.
Keep a positive attitude. No matter what happens.
Okay, thank you. Let's give a hand to the people. They did such a good job. Okay, I heard little giggles, and I saw movements of the face and kind of warm smiles at points that looked like recognition. I want to put just for a minute, put those on hold, because I want to let you get into groups and talk about what some of these recognitions that you had or what some of your experiences were. I want to hold off to do just one thing first to add to that discussion time. There are messages that we sometimes get from our families that are not positive and that are not life-enhancing, that don't enlarge us, that don't enrich us, and don't accept us. And I'd like to talk about those. I call them messages that diminish. when I was, I had my marker out yesterday and I was writing messages that, and I went, diminish, I haven't used that word for a long time. I'm not really sure that that's what I want. So I got out my handy thesaurus. I'm doing some writing, so I brought that along. And I thought, I better check out, what does diminish really mean? Is that what I meant? And here's what diminish is, these are the words that are synonyms for diminish. Discount, belittle, weaken, subtract, lessen, curtail, shrink, reduce. And I went, yep, exactly the word I wanted. That's the word I wanted, because these messages do not give us the growth